This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello, my cat loving friends. If you are a regular listener of ours, you already know Dr. Kelly Cairns. We adore her. She is a veterinarian specializing in internal medicine. She is the VP of Health and Education. I think I have this memorized for over 400 Thrive Pet Care hospitals. And she graciously donates time every month to come talk to us about our hot topics. And right now, our hot topic is orphaned kittens. We are in it. So we selfishly asked her to broach that subject because I need her. So we're going to break for a word from our meowsing sponsor. And as soon as we get back, we're going to get into it. Hey, it's Linda Hall from 19 Cats and Counting.
And I'm Rita Reimers from 19 Cats and Counting. You know the expression that cats have 9 lives? Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life.
How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control the free-roaming cat populations, too. You can learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org.
That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to 19 Cats and Counting. I am your co-host, Linda Hall. Here with the lady that started my love of kittens and turned me on, or cats, period, and turned me on to the mysteries of feline behavior, my BFF, my partner in crime, although we don't talk about the crimes, Rita Reimers.
Don't tell anyone what I know.
It slipped out.
I don't think I started your love of kittens. I think that was your daughter. I think I added to it.
But it was the understanding and the fact that they communicate and I wasn't picking up on it that made me like a kid who hadn't eaten and was hungry for food.
Well, let's talk about why Dr. Kelly is here. Dr. Kelly is here because, your turn. You've got orphan kittens. Yeah. I've been there a few times myself. Dr. Kelly's here to give us some expert information and advice about those teeny little babies. How old are your kittens, Linda?
We're guesstimating the two of them are 5 to 6 weeks, and one of them is about 4 weeks. That's my guess at the moment.
Yeah. So what do you think about that, Dr. Kelly? She has a handful, right?
Congratulations. It's amazing, and I'm only just slightly jealous. I think I need a half dozen of them myself right now.
Yeah, they're so cute.
And it is a lot of work.
So this is my problem. I have never adopted a cat that was too young to be weaned. They have all been 8 to 10 weeks. And Reed and I had both actually sworn off kittens. It's a lot, right? Any kitten, even a 12-week kitten.
I'm in my 60s. That's a lot of work for somebody in their 60s. 19 cats that are adults are hard enough, right?
And if the cat lives to be 21, like my tiger just did that we lost in August, am I going to be able to handle this cat? So, but we had an emergency situation, so we did it. And it has been an eye-opener. I thought kittens were kittens. Kittens are not kittens. Under 8 to 10 weeks, this is a whole nother ball game, and we need your help. So to start with, this is not something that you should do unless a kitten is orphaned, right?
That is correct. We never want to separate a kitten or kittens from their mother. And if you do happen to find a kitten or kittens and they're with their mother, it's probably best to have them checked by a veterinarian and then make plans accordingly. Likewise, if you do find a basket of kittens, I have inherited some family members this way, where they actually came to a clinic just outside the front door and there was a basket of kittens that then became my family members. You're still going to want to, as soon as you can, have those kittens checked by a veterinarian to make sure that it looks like everything is healthy with them and they don't need any medical care. We want to keep the kittens with mom as long as possible, though. There's a lot of development. There's a lot of bonding. There's a lot of proper immune function development that comes from that.
Unfortunately, this kittens were orphaned. Their mom was hit by a car. At least the mom of the first two. We don't know about
this. Yeah, that's a whole confusing story we won't get into. But yeah, so, and I initially heard about one and I brought one home. And then I heard there's another and I brought two home and that ended up three. But I realized I wasn't using my behaviorist brain when I adopted one kitten because who's going to teach them to socialize when they've been taken away from
now 2 years? Your husband that said, why didn't you get two? They do better in pairs. We're like, boy, you've been hanging around us too long.
The former I don't like cats man. Yeah. But, you know, they are, especially the two older ones, they are just going at it all over the place. The youngest one I've noticed is not as playful to that and really wants to be in my shirt or behind my hair. Like, he still wants to be snuggled up against mama. And he searches for teats on my face. And I realize it makes me feel badly that he needs this. And it was taken.
That he's missing his mom, yeah.
They're a lot of fun, though. So, first shot. We feed my cats about 3 times a day. It's not working with the kittens. They woke me up in the middle of the night trying to nurse on my head and crying and making a whole lot of noise. So how often should kittens under that age at least eat?
All right. So let's unpack what's a kitten. So for me, a kitten is a cat that is under a year of age. And then I loosely subdivide that into about 6 months to a year, which is like a mature kitten, and under 6 months, which is a younger kitten. The kittens that most of us think about when we think about kittens, or the images of kittens on the internet, are in kitten calendars.
Which you just happen to have.
Here we go. For those of you watching the podcast, here's my kitten calendar.
So
cute. So the images of kittens that we are familiar with are likely to be kittens that are 8 weeks of age or 8 to 12 weeks of age. That's when they're delightfully tiny, but basically behave like very animated versions of the cats we know and love. So when we talk about taking care of a neonate or a newborn or a tiny kitten, for me, that's a kitten under 8 weeks of age. Okay.
That's what you've got.
So that's what you got. So what happens, though, between birth and age and 8 weeks of age, a lot of stuff happens week over week. So what we do for a 1 to 2 week old kitten is different than what we do for a 2 to 4 week old kitten. So in general, first of all, you're a hero for stepping into care for these kittens. It is just like having a newborn human child.
I told Rita that. I'm having flashbacks, Dr. Kelly. I'm 57. I'll be 58 in March.
But you have triplets.
So how often, you'd ask, do they need to be fed? And we could talk about then what they need to be fed. A newborn kitten up until about 2 weeks of age is still, when they're very tiny, their eyes aren't even open for the first few days. In that first 2 weeks of life, and again, you're partnering with your veterinarian here, you're making sure they don't need medical care. The feeding is generally every 2 to 3 hours, even during the night, just like a human newborn. Okay, they need round-the-clock feeding. When they get to be about 2 to 4 weeks of age, we're moving to about every 4 to 6 hours. The kittens still have very small stomachs during this age of development, and so frequent feedings are still really important. When we hit 4 to 6 weeks of age, this is where we are probably feeding about 4 times a day or every 6 hours, and that's when we're starting to change up what we're feeding them. So I've answered how frequent. And now let's talk about what they can get. How does that
sound? Yes, please. Because there is, you know, the options. There is kitten milk replacement, which I definitely did because I know they should still be getting mama's milk. But then there's bottle, not bottle. They have done fine with drinking it out of a saucer, so I got out of the bottle thing. Okay. Then there's kitten wet food, which I'm doing. But then there's also kitten dry food. So it's a big, like, what, when, where.
All right, so we're going to start with liquid, and then eventually we're going to move to a gruel or a paste or puree. And then when they get old enough, you make the decision about whether or not you're introducing dry, so harder. It is really critical that a kitten gets a kitten milk replacement formula that is designed specifically for kittens. Now, the great news is that all of our amazing pet food and pet supply companies out there, or stores out there, there are very great, awesome products that will say that it meets the requirements for a newborn kitten. So that's what you're looking for over the counter. You don't usually need a prescription. So we're using a kitten milk replacement formula designed specifically for kittens. It's critical that kittens do not get other alternatives, not human infant formula, not cow's milk. Those do not provide the proper nutrition. And not only can that cause digestive upset, it can cause some serious medical conditions in a kitten this small. Okay.
Okay. So we got that. We're just using that.
Quick question though. So like I bought KMR, I bought kitten milk replacement, but then I picked up, I don't even remember how now, these packets of dried goat's milk that has probiotic that says it's good for all ages. So I kind of mixed that in with some of the wet food, but I don't know. Then it's like, wait, am I causing digestion problems?
Well, I can't comment on that specific product because I don't know which one that is. The question is, so you know you're feeding a nutritionally complete formula with that KMR. The question is what's in the additional supplement going to upset the apple cart or be neutral or potentially beneficial? So for that particular product, you might just want to chat with your vet and have them look at specifically what is in there. We do know that there's different bacterial strains that are better for certain species over other species. So we talk about probiotics. That basically means bacteria and yeast that are beneficial. Humans have different species than dogs do, than cats do, which is why we do have products out there that are designed, you'll see, for dogs, probiotics for dogs. So you might just want to have your vet check on that product. Now, if we're feeding a formula that's designed for kittens and we know we're doing it when they're really itty bitty every 2 to 3 hours, the question is, well, how do I get this into them? So much like a human infant, they're not just going to pick up a cup and drink it down, or they're not going to lap something up in a bowl. So you will be feeding them out of a tiny little, and you can buy these over the counter as well, bottle that is designed to feed small animals with a nipple. Okay. And you could take that nipple, and if you need to make it a little larger so that it's easier for the flow to come out, you can take and use a clean needle or sterilize something to then go ahead and make that needle, the hole in the nipple, a little bigger. Now, sometimes, because you do need to suck with those bottles and nipples, even if, again, one of my little life hacks for feeding kittens is you can make the size of the, I've actually taken in the past, clean, Sarah, you want everything clean, wash it, scissors, and literally nicked the tip of that, because I have had many tiny little newborn kittens where the size of that pinprick hole was too small for them. If they don't have a robust suck reflex, they don't have the muscles developed to be able to get enough liquid out of that nipple. So you just make little incremental increases in sizes so that you're not also drowning it out of their, you know, drowning them in their throat. Sometimes you could also pivot to an actual syringe without a needle, but a little tiny, say 3 or 6 milliliter syringe, which you may be able to get over the counter or obtain from your veterinarian. In my experience, the reason why folks will move to a syringe is because they need a different hole, a bigger hole, which the syringe has. And also when you're syringing, you are able to push the plunger to give them the amount that they need that corresponds to the rate that they're swallowing. So you can help them get it in. So the syringe is often a workaround for a kitten that doesn't have a strong suck reflex.
I'm feeling very, I don't know what my word is here. I'm feeling very like I just got a pat on the back because I just had a friend reach out to me and say, I had a litter of kittens. She had 8 babies. One of them was not getting time at the teat and was becoming lethargic, and I was getting very scared. So I sent her over some KMR and I told her, you know, try the bottle. And then I got a message saying, he's not taking the bottle. So I said, try a syringe. And I'm like, I am not an expert at this. I'm as far in the deep end as you are, girlfriend, but I'm going to pull this out. So I'm feeling really good that I said the right thing. Thank you.
And again, you know, my disclaimer is always going to be, when in doubt, take the kitten to the vet, have a conversation with the vet. The syringe can be a good technique to, again, control in a metered fashion the amount of liquid you're putting into their little mouths so that they can you can coordinate it with their swallow. You just need to be very attentive to that, because a little tiny bit of formula can be a lot in their mouths, and you wouldn't want to inadvertently risk them aspirating or choking on that liquid.
Yeah, I've read that you can accidentally drown a kitten if you don't know exactly how to bottle feed. That's true then, isn't it?
Definitely.
It's true.
Look at the baby, right?
I know. I know. You can see the video. That would be number one's little black ears are poking out of that cat bed. Number two is on the edge of the bed.
So cute.
And number three is sound asleep on me. So
look at the size difference between those two and that one. You can see there's a big size difference.
And I have noticed, like, you know, the older ones, the bigger ones, they are able to chew something that's crunchy if it's small and baby meant for kittens. The little one cannot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this, and that's a great point. So it's a great transition to, if we're doing this kitten formula and we know we're going to be doing it every 2 to 3 hours until they're about 2 weeks of age, and then 2 to 4 weeks, it's every 4 to 6 hours. When can we or should we be doing something in addition? And so about 4 weeks of age, 4 to 6 weeks of age, you can start introducing, in most instances, a soft food or gruel alongside your formula. And so most typically what we will recommend is that it is a kitten wet food, not a cat wet food, that is mixed maybe in a blender 50-50 with the kitten formula. So it forms a gruel or a slightly thickened paste that you are often still bottle feeding. Or if they're ready, you can put a little bit of that on a plate and see if they will lap it up. But what I've done in the beginning of that 4 to 6 week period is that's where I've then used my bottle, where I've taken, and I've actually taken a specific cap and a nipple, and I've literally cut it for a very big hole so that the gruel just flows out of it. But it eventually, in this 4 to 6 week period, you can, they will start to lap up that gruel from a plate.
Yeah.
Is that where you are right now?
That is where I'm at.
With one and two, what about number three?
Yeah. So number three, even from the beginning, but I think it's because his only choice at the farm was adult kibble that was watered down. I think he figured it out for himself or starved, but he's been able to eat kitten wet food. But again, it is very diluted. So, and, you know, things like, you know, they make those squeeze up treats for cats. So Rita sent me some little squeeze up for
that are made cats for kittens,
that are made for as baby thrive. So, yeah. And so do that kind of as a treat. And yeah, he's all over that. So,
well, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll get on to the next topic in our discussion about how to take care of orphan kittens. So we'll be right back.
PetGreens is proud to support 19 Cats and Counting on Pet Life Radio. Our small family farm produces live organic cat grass, catnip, and soft chew treats packed with green nutrition to help your pets truly thrive inside. We're partnering with pioneer cat behavior expert and best-selling author Pam Johnson Bennett to help indoor cats live their best lives with indoor enrichment tips for their parents.
I'm very careful about the products that I choose because I have built a reputation over 4 decades where cat parents trust me, and they know that when I recommend a brand or talk about a particular product, they know it came from my heart and I really believe it. I've done my research with PetGreens. I love the products. I love the quality. And one of the things that I feel just stands out is the education that PetGreens provides. They guide you every step of the way. It's a relationship. I know how much they love cats and how much they love cat welfare and cat health, and that's their motivation.
For more information on the benefits of cat grass and catnip for your cat's indoor enrichment, visit petgreens.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with 19 Cats and Counting. Linda is new mom to some neonate kittens. And Dr. Kelly's giving us some great guidance, because we get a lot of people booking behavior sessions that have kittens that are, we've had some 5 and 7 year old kittens.
Yeah. I am very grateful. This is not an experience I chose to sign up for, I guess. It's not an experience I wanted. and I really don't think I'm going to do this again, at least not on purpose. I am having the time of my life and I adore them and I am head over heels in love with them. But again, it's like having a baby at 57 and I'm not up for that. But
Linda says it's the greatest experience she never wanted.
I never wanted. It's the greatest gift I didn't want. Yes. But, you know, I'm glad I had the experience because, yeah, I can't preach what I haven't practiced. But so let's talk about the other end, because what comes in must go out. So the two older ones, I showed them the litter box. They did great. Couple times somebody didn't get all the way in there, but you know, it was a struggle. I had to find the lowest sided litter pan I had. The tiny one peed and pooped on our bed.
Yeah, she did. I had to teach a couple cats to use the litter. So welcome to my world, Linda.
Yeah, he's got it now and he can even get into it. But is this a normal thing? And I understand that at one age, which fortunately that was not my issue, you have to like stimulate their anus to get things moving. And so fill us in on the poop and pee end.
Yeah, because mom takes care of all that, right? I mean, they don't even have to go to the bathroom. Mom takes care.
Yeah, mom does that naturally. So, and it does seem a little odd, like, well, I need to help them to pee and poop, but it's completely natural. Their mother is doing that in normal course of nature. And in no time, they're going to be able to handle it on their own. We're not stimulating them at the age of 4 weeks. And again, any questions about if they're peeing or pooping, talk to your veterinarian, because there are some congenital developmental abnormalities. And so we want to get on top of that really quickly if a kitten kind of comes out with wrong anatomy. But if a kitten is under about 3 weeks of age, you need to help them and stimulate them to pee and poop. And so what we do basically is we say after each feeding, you take just 1 minute to help stimulate both the urinary behavior and the bowel movement using a soft, damp cloth or a cotton ball even that's just dampened with warm water, not really hot, not cold. And you will gently rub the kitten's urogenital anal area in a circular motion. That's going to mimic the mom's tongue and encourage them to urinate and defecate. And when they're this small, what comes out is not a giant volume or very overwhelming. Having said that, you know, you want to make sure that you are in an environment and in an area that's comfortable for you and your home. Usually they will simply do it on the cloth or on the cotton ball. What I like to do as early as possible in their life. So, you know, once their eyes are open and they're teetering around and they're a couple weeks of age, is after I stimulate them, put them in the litter box. And as they get to be a little older, 3 weeks of age, even putting them in many times a day, and just even sometimes taking their paws and holding their paws and gently using a hand to hold their paw and make them with their paw scratch the litter box. And they're such smart. Let's face it. We all know that they're superior in every way.
They're so smart.
They're so smart.
They will pick this up very, very quickly. It's a natural instinct for them. And they will soon as sure as shooting be using that litter box on their own in no time.
You know, as little as they are, they're getting themselves into the Casa Leo all by themselves.
Yeah, I didn't think they were using the automatic litter box. I don't even know how they're climbing in there. And I got a regular one right next to it. And then I checked the app and it's like, kitty, just use the loo, weighing 2.2 pounds. I'm like, what?
They're so smart.
These three were fortunately past the point that I didn't have to stimulate anything. One and two had, of course, never used a litter box. They'd only been outside. I put them in it once. It was a done deal. Glory, hallelujah. Number three wasn't really getting it. So we employed my human mom brain and we would feed them. And like 15 minutes later, it'd be like, honey, we need to put them in the litter box. And we just set them in the box. And so finally, we have gone from having the quilt that Aunt Peggy handmade for us being pooped and peed on to, my husband was not good with that, to them using the box, even the tiny one. But I have noticed, and I don't know if this is an age thing, little bit, as I call the tiny one, does not cover his poo. But his brothers will go behind him and cover it for him. Are they teaching him? Are they just cleaning up after him? Should I be teaching him?
Good question.
I think on that one, it might be reasonable to employ a little bit of a watch and wait. You know, I might put that right now into the personality bucket. And especially if the litter mates are kind of assisting, I've had some cats like that where they never cover their own and somebody else sweeps in and does it for them. And my experience is as they age, they tend to do that a little bit more. So as long as it's normal poop, it's in the box, you know, I think you can watch and wait for a few weeks and maybe they'll take the lead from the good behaving siblings.
That's a good point. Normal poop. These kittens had coccidia when they first came to Linda. I'm very experienced with coccidia, unfortunately. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that is?
Rita, their poop is kind of yellow and runny, and it has quite a smell. And she said,
coccidia.
Not a vet, but I'm guaranteeing you this is coccidia. So I had some natural holistic stuff that's supposed to help with that. I put it in their food and it solved the issue. Otherwise, I would have had to have gone. You know, we have the benefit of having people like you, God bless you, Dr. Kelly, that are in our pocket and in our corner that we can reach out to. Yeah.
And people like me who've had multiple cats since 2002.
And relying on Rita, who has done this thing. But
done that.
The other thing I've really been looking at, and this is, again, a behaviorist point of view, is that we often get clients that have bottle fed a baby and this kitten does not speak cat because he did not get that time. So I think that they're all benefiting from being with each other. But I have also taken to, when they do something, moving them and hissing at them and kind of acting like their mother. They look ridiculous.
It helps.
But is that, you know, like, am I on the right track? Like, it is now my job to help fill in for mom in every aspect, not just nutrition and poo and pee, but in socialization and behavior?
You know, maybe a little bit.
Okay. Then I'll keep hissing. They'll keep making fun of me, but I'll keep hissing. So next would be, I know that they have to get, is it called combo tested, before they can get neutered, which they will be getting neutered.
Well, before they don't get their first shot.
So my next question is, when do we go to get that combo test? Because I don't want to bring anybody before it's time. Money's a thing, right? I'm going to be taking three of them. So I want to take it when all three are ready. And then, you know, what vaccinations, when, what is the best age to neuter? Because I don't want to do it too soon, but I also know problems can come from doing it too late.
Yeah. Okay. So lots of great stuff to talk about there. So in general, the first appointment to your vet should probably be around 6 weeks of age, definitely between 6 and 8 weeks of age. And what's going to happen there is going to have some things that your vet recommends that are pretty uniform based upon American Association of Feline Practitioners recommendations. And then there's going to be things that are customized for your specific kitten relative to that kitten, you, your household, the other animals, and the environment. In general, we are going, when you talk about combo testing, your vet's going to do a quick little blood test that is going to make sure that your kitty does not have a feline leukemia virus or feline immunodeficiency virus. Having those viruses does not inherently mean that your cat is doomsday, but they are viruses that we need to know about. There are some health risks with this, and those viruses, although many cats can live a great life for a very long time, we take different proactive measures when a kitty has either of those. But because those are very infectious to other cats, it will then impact recommendations about exposing your positive cat to negative cats. So that's the combo test. Another thing your vet's going to talk to you about is the vaccination schedule. So there's a critical window of time when your veterinarian wants to start those vaccinations to protect against the most common things we vaccinate cats for. So feline distemper, which is also called panleukopenia. It's a potentially fatal virus, feline calici virus, which can cause upper respiratory tract symptoms, and feline rhinotracheitis, which is like feline herpes virus, different than human herpes virus. It's another respiratory tract virus. That's a core vaccine. We call it FVRCP. It's a single vaccine. It's critical from keeping your cat safe against common and dangerous diseases. And you need more than one vaccine. And typically we booster every approximately 3 weeks until the kitty's about 16 to 20 weeks of age.
It's a set of three, right?
It could be three. It could be more than three. It depends a little bit on, or less than three, depending upon when your veterinarian sees that cat and how old it is and what's going on. And so there's very specific AAFP guidelines that your veterinarian will follow. Yes, but we can napkin math and say three. And then, of course, the rabies vaccine, which is not given this young. It's given when they're a little bit older at the end of the series of the others. Your vet is also going to talk to you about other vaccines that may not be what we call core vaccines that every kitty is recommended to get, but are considered optional and potentially optional, meaning your vet may say this is a critical vaccine for your cat based upon environment and potential risk factors, okay? So that's vaccines. Of course, your veterinarian is going to be doing a great physical examination and talking to you about everything going on at home to make sure that we think everything is on track. And that physical examination is key. There's so many things your vet can pick up that even an experienced layperson may not notice. And then your vet is going to deworm your kitten and talk about repeated deworming. And so we're going to want to check a fecal sample so we can see what's in there. But we are also going to be likely what's called empirically deworming. That means that if you can't get poop for whatever reason, we hope you can bring it, collect it. We love you if you bring us poop. But even if we do a fecal exam and it's negative for parasites, no test is perfect. So your veterinarian is likely to recommend what's called empiric deworming to cover bases for common things that kittens can get, worms and other parasites, including coccidia, which is not a worm per se. It's a different type of parasite. Okay, so these are all the things that are going to be happening at that first visit. Your vet is going to also be talking to you, lest I forget, about flea, tick, and heartworm treatment, not all of which might be started on that first visit, but it is critical that your vet make a recommendation and get things started to be proactive.
Fleas are, and they came in with fleas and ear mites and all kinds of trouble. So yeah, right. I gotta tell you.
And Linda has a cat, an adult cat that's FIV positive. So are there any precautions we need to worry about there?
Yeah. So again, for the kitty that is FIV positive, that virus is a retrovirus similar to HIV that people get. It's a very different virus. One is not contagious to other species. It's species specific, but it's in the same kind of category of what we call retroviruses, meaning that a cat that's infected can ostensibly, it could stay what's called dormant forever and never impact quality or quantity of life. If it is activated, though, it can then cause problems. We also are very proactive with a cat that has FIV to make sure that we change things we're doing in terms of monitoring. And when they are sick with some sort of other issue unrelated to the FIV, we might have a modified treatment plan because we know that cat's immune system is not like other cats.
Yeah, that's the kind of a thing in my house. If one of the cats sneezes, like, hey guys, so-and-so sneeze, keep an eye on him. If Kismet sneezes, doctor!
Right.
Is there any concern about mixing him with the kittens, though?
Well, that's a thing, though. The other thing is, if you do have a cat that has FIV or FELV, you would want to make sure that that cat is not then interacting with other cats who are not FELV or FIV positive, because the concern could be that the positive cat may spread it to the negative cats. But that's a conversation to have with your veterinarian. It's kind of individualized and a little complicated. And just to make sure you're being practical and also proactive to protect all your cats.
We did separate. My adult cats are not happy. There's 10 cats who have been locked out of my bedroom after being allowed to be in here all the time. That was another problem that it caused. But I just did not want to take the chance of the kittens having something and infecting the older cats. My cat with FIV is a lover, not a fighter. He just isn't one. He will not bite. But I don't know how he'd react if I sicked a 6-week-old, 4-week-old.
Well, I was concerned about the kitten spreading something to him also, because he's got that weakened immune system.
100%.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap soon. But as usual, I would love to give Dr. Kelly the last word.
All right. Well, you guys know I always like to leave our kitty loving friends with an actionable toolkit. Let's talk about the take-home points. Knowledge is power, okay? So in general, let's remember that if you do get the delightful pleasure of taking care of tiny little newborn kittens, you've got this, you can do it. You want to partner with your veterinarian and you want to trust your instincts, right? So if something doesn't seem right, don't hesitate to contact your veterinarian. Common sense things that we want to remind ourselves of: weakness or lethargy, depression, not eating, losing weight, not gaining weight, any trouble breathing, vomiting, diarrhea, goopy eyes or nose, vocalizing in an odd, unusual way. If you're not sure if they're urinating or defecating, okay, obviously we're taking those kittens right in, all right? And then it's really important to remember that kittens are, in addition to being small cats, they are different than small cats. So even when we think about the ways cats are not like dogs, as it relates to things that might be okay over the counter to give a dog, they can be very toxic for a cat. I'm going to also share things that might be fine to give over the counter to a cat may not be safe for a kitten, especially under 8 weeks of age and under 2 pounds. So you have to be incredibly careful, even with over-the-counter flea treatments and other things, to make sure, if you're not at all positive, contact your veterinarian. There's a lot of options for making sure that the kitten gets what it needs and it is safe, but it's not the time to be experimenting with things that we're not positive of.
That makes complete sense. I know you've reinforced Linda in a lot of things she was doing and given her some new things to think about, right? And hopefully anyone out there who is mothering kittens like this, I have to give a special shout out to Hannah Shaw. This is all Kitten Lady does, is deal with these ditty bitties. You know, I've been through it a couple times. I think Linda said this is it, once is enough, right? So God bless you, Hannah Shaw. Thank you, Dr. Kelly, for giving us your wisdom as usual. I know this is going to be a great episode. You're going to help a lot of people with this. And Linda Hall, better you than me. Thanks, Mark Winter, for giving us this platform. We so appreciate it. And remember, every day is cat and kitten day. See you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.